inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today has a really interesting perspective. He's a really successful rental property owner. He owns 19 properties personally, but he also owns a property management company. So he sees things as both a rental property owner and as a property manager. He's got a lot of experience. So we're going to cover a ton of ground today. Let's take a real quick break. We'll come right back and we'll meet Rick Sane from Orlando.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Can we quench the world's thirst for clean and safe water? This is something the new podcast Waterline explores. Waterline is a new podcast created to communicate the many facets of water. If you're looking to learn and explore about economic, political, social, behavioral, technological, and environmental aspects of water around the globe, Waterline Podcast covers them all. I checked out the episode called Water Makes the World Go Round. It's a real interesting look into the water economy. If you want to check it out, just search Waterline Podcast on iTunes or in your favorite Android podcast app. Hey, Rick, welcome to the podcast. Now, you started in real estate, selling real estate. You were a realtor. And then at some point, you transitioned from the sales side of the business over to the investment and property management side. How did you make that transition?
So basically, what kind of led me toward the property management side was over the years of doing real estate sales. I'd only been doing sales at that point about 3 years. I had about 10 properties that I managed. And what I noticed was from the 10 properties that I managed that every month I received an income from those properties that I managed. And I liked that. It was residual, it was passive income. And month after month, I could count on that. We're in sales. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of peaks and valleys in the income stream.
Right.
At that point, I wanted to figure out a way to grow the property management side of my career and make that a bigger portion of my career and less of a portion on the sales side of it. And over the years, we've grown that to about 968 rentals since I've been working on it diligently since about 1994.
Now, so your property management company owns or manages 968 rentals. And then you've got your own personal portfolio. What does your personal portfolio look like?
It's all duplexes, and I do have one single family home. I have 18 duplexes in one house.
Okay. Now, you've got kind of an interesting perspective as an owner, being that you're seeing kind of what works and what doesn't work as a property manager. So now tell me this, when you're screening a tenant, is there a way to know if this tenant is going to be good? I mean, you can look at their credit, you can look at their background, but is there any kind of secret sauce that you found to tell if someone's going to be good? Or do you just kind of do your due diligence and then at the end of the day, it's kind of a crapshoot if this person's going to work out or not?
I mean, typically you can tell from their credit report if they're going to work out in that aspect.
Okay.
Without any doubt, the longevity on their job and so forth. But the one thing that you cannot tell is how clean they're going to be or how well they're going to maintain the cleanliness of the property. Because a credit report can't tell you that. You can have an score and live like a slob.
Right. Okay. Now, so you find that credit is probably, I guess, let me ask it as a question. Is credit really the most important thing that you found is an indicator of if someone's going to be a good tenant or not?
The credit and also their rental history.
Okay.
Are two things that we weigh out very, very heavily.
One thing that you do, which I think is really cool, is with the security deposit. So you don't make the security deposit the same as the rent amount. Why is that?
So basically, if I have a tenant that gives notice to vacate, and they decide they're not paying their last month's rent because they think they've paid it already in their deposit. If they were to sue me and take me to court over that, I can clearly show the judge that the deposit's completely different from the actual rent, and I will prevail.
Okay, so if the rent is $1,000 a month, you'll make the deposit $995 to show that this isn't an extra month's rent that the tenant's paid.
Correct.
We've had a lot of people on the podcast that have grown really big rental portfolios. They self-manage it, and they don't seem to have a lot of trouble managing their properties. On the other hand, we've had a lot of people on the show that have just a couple of properties, and they just seem to really struggle with managing a handful of properties. What do you see as the number one mistake that people make when they try to manage on their own?
We see a lot of customers that they get emotionally involved with their tenant and, you know, kind of in for a penny, in for a pound, and they're a month behind and the tenant's pleading with them and, you know, the tenant has a new story for them. And a lot of them, they just want to believe that the tenant's going to come through, and they don't. Mm-hmm. You have like a business and not allow yourself to get emotionally involved. And they have to remove themselves and yep. treat it as a transaction and not allow themselves to get pulled into the tenant's world. They're running a business, and any money that you lose, you're never going to recoup.
Right, right, right. So do you think people shouldn't self-manage? Like, do you think that most people should probably have a property manager just to help the business run more like a business?
I agree with you 100%. Now, for the properties that I own, we do manage them here through my company, uh-huh. but the tenant that I'm the owner.
Right. The tenants know that you're the owner?
No, they don't know that.
Okay. Okay. That's interesting. So, like, is it just, do you not let them know you're the owner just so that you can kind of act more like a manager?
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's good. Now, what do you do when a lease is coming up? You know, it's always kind of a struggle for me on if I should raise rent when the lease is coming up, or if I should just keep the rent the same to increase the odds that my tenant's going to stay. What do you generally do?
I will tell you that in this market in Orlando, we typically tend to raise the rent. Is what we're going to do, because I think that renter is going to find out if they go out into the marketplace and see what's going on, they're going to find that the rent for a comparable property is going to be the same elsewhere as well.
Okay. So you'll always kind of err towards the side of raising rent than keeping it the same, I guess, or you're evaluating the market to see if the rent should be raised.
Correct. That's
yeah.
correct.
Yeah. Now, what about, like, have you ever seen a market where the rents went down? Or, I mean, because you've been doing this for a long time. Like, do rents generally go up, or have you ever had to lower a rent based on market conditions?
I've never witnessed them going down, at least as of yet. I have 27 years in, but I think it's very possible.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So let's talk about your portfolio. So tell me about the first property that you bought.
Okay. That one there, that is going to be 4712, 4714 Bay Willow Court. I bought that when the market crashed. I think the owner that was selling it was just afraid to stay in the market. I actually bought that property. I paid $64,000 cash for it. It's a duplex. Each side is a two-bedroom, two-bath. With a one-car garage on each side. When I first acquired that unit, the rents were $650 per month, so pretty decent ROI. I think that yielded about $15,600 a year. I think that came out to be about a 26% rate of return at the time. That's no longer what I get on that property. That property, actually, the rents have increased to $850 per side, so it's bringing in $1,700 a month. I believe that's about $20,000 in change per month. So my ROI has increased tremendously on that property, in addition to the appreciation. So I paid $64,000 for that one. And back in, I want to say 2009, property's value today is about $180 to $190. So the appreciation and the monthly residual has been very, very profitable.
That's incredible. Now, with that kind of a return, are you ever tempted to sell and buy something else, or that it's never crossed your mind?
No, you know, and I'll be honest with you, I get letters in the mail all the time. Let me do some math here. I get letters all the time in the mail As a matter of fact, it's on Fridays. So on Fridays, I leave the office and go play golf. And then I get back home from club and I come to a stack of mail soliciting to buy my stuff. And the one thing that I'm not interested in selling is because I'm more interested in the residual income, passive income, and coming in month after month after month. Because once I take that appreciation and I sell the property, I'm going to have to pay taxes on it.
Right.
And it's where every year I've got $20,400 coming in just off of that one building.
Right. Right. Yeah. That is pretty awesome. Now, have you seen a lot of appreciation with your other properties or not really?
Well, overall, all those particular properties are all there on two different streets in the same neighborhood. So they've all experienced the same.
That's great.
Value. Now, I purchased them all at different prices. I mean, that one was probably the second cheapest one I bought. I bought one over there for $56,000 as well. I bought, I think, two of them. I paid $69,000. So as the market was starting to improve, some of the prices went up a little bit on me, but it was still very good acquisitions.
Yeah. Are you still looking for new properties today, or do you feel like that the market's appreciated so much that it's harder to make the numbers work and you're not interested in buying more properties?
It's more difficult to make the numbers work for the rate of return that I'm looking for. Every investor is different. Some are happy with a 7-8% return. I like to be in the double digits and preferably in the 20% range. I personally am not buying any improved real estate at the time. I am, however, buying vacant land. The improved real estate right now, it just costs too much to buy. And I always feel like I buy when nobody else is buying.
Yeah. Tell me what that was like, because 2008, 2009, you know, it's like looking back on it now, you think, God, you know, what a great time to buy. The things were so cheap, but it sure didn't feel very good back then. It kind of felt like the sky was falling.
Scary?
Yeah. So what was that like? Like how did you have the foresight to know things were going to get better and the things, you know, because I guess the fear was things are bad and it's only going to get worse. So like, how did you know, hey, this is a great deal and things are going to get better?
At that time, well, being in the real estate, I'd been in the real estate business for a long time at that point in my career. I knew what I could bring in rent-wise on those properties. Mm-hmm. So like, if I could sustain those rent values, I said over time, eventually investors end up owning about 40% of the real estate out there right now. Because millennials, they don't want to buy anything. They just want rent.
Sure.
But I knew that it hit rock bottom at that point. I didn't think it was going to go any further down, and it didn't. I mean, I bought literally in the basement, and I felt like it had nowhere to go but up. So once all these properties got back out there into investors' hands, and then the investors were able to rent those properties out to people that were displaced because of foreclosures and so forth, and then the market settled. And then eventually I figured we'd start to have more of an influx of people moving in from out of state. And that's exactly what happened. Now, the other thing too is that the real estate market here in Orlando, they were no longer doing any new construction. New construction came to a complete halt. There was nothing going on. So I figured eventually the demand would exceed the supply. And that's exactly situation that we're in today.
And so even seeing the cycle, I mean, you've seen it from the bottom, you've seen it to the top. And I know you said you have no interest in selling, but do you feel that we're maybe at the top of the cycle right now? Or does it not even matter because your properties are cash flowing? And if properties were to go down in value a little bit, it doesn't matter because you've got your cash flow.
You know, it doesn't matter to me because they cash flow. You know, I look at it like this. My wife and I purchased our home where we live back in 2002. So I feel like I'm living in the economy based on 2002 regarding my own personal home.
Yep.
I know what it cost me in 2002. I know what it costs today. I know what the interest rates are today and so forth. So I'm like stuck living in a different economy.
Right.
Today, I would be living in today's economy. So because all those properties were acquired prior to or between 2008 and 2014, those properties are living on a different economy than.
Yeah. And, you know, that's really the awesome thing with real estate is that you're able to kind of lock in, like you said, the economy at that time, where over time prices are always going to go up. I mean, even if there's a momentary blip where prices go down, I think 20, 30 years from now, prices are going to be higher than they are today.
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. Now tell me this, if someone is looking to generate passive income and you started your property management as a way to generate passive income, residual income every month, do you think that's a good way to generate residual income by starting a property management company? Or do you think that there's a lot of hassle, and unless you can do things at a really big scale like you are today, that it's maybe not worth it?
You know, there's and I bought out smaller companies. You know, they just get to a certain point where my business isn't growing anymore, or they get aggravated and they're frustrated. So a lot of those players sell out.
Yeah.
You got to get the numbers up there in order to really get the bigger residual profitable income coming in. I mean, that's the key. You don't want to stay around 40. I've seen some where there was one that I bought out that had 72 properties. You know, and I think if he was stuck with it and kept growing, it would have been more worth his time. But he just never seemed to get over that plateau because he was dabbling in sales and he was doing other things, where I've taken my time and I've dedicated it strictly to property management.
Right. So you've got managing 968 properties. I mean, I assume you've got a pretty big team. How many people does it take to manage that many properties?
So we have six staff, and we have two other property managers.
That's incredible that you're able to manage it with that few people. How are you able to do that? Is it just that you've got everyone so specialized and you're just so keyed in to what has to happen that
I
you're
think
able
to place today? The software is just state of the art. It's online based. We're able to do work orders. We don't have to call the vendor anymore and say, "Hey, I need you to unplug the toilet or whatnot." We go in the system, create a work order, email it to the vendor. It gets carbon copied to you, and there's a copy in the system. So I think the software that's available to us now, much, much better tool to be able to navigate heavy volume. The way it pays the owners and does the ACH transfers. I mean, we're able to, you know, send out $200,000 or $300,000 with the push of a button.
Right.
Before, I'm going to be printing all day today.
Right. Totally.
Very, very automated.
Now, are your tenants paying you through ACH also, or are there a lot of them paying through checks or other ways? In person.
We have a variety of tenants.
Okay.
Pay through their tenant portal. So they can basically go online and they can remit their payment either via their check or their checking account with an ACH transfer. They can pay with a credit card. Believe it or not, they can go to 7-Eleven and pay their rent. We issue them a UPC barcode, and some of them do pay, you know, that don't bank the banks. They'll go to 7-Eleven, they'll pay their rent cash. 7-Eleven clerk will scan their UPC barcode, and within 45 minutes, that money's in my office account. And they can also now do it at CVS. They can pay their rent there. And, you know, so we make it as simple as possible for them to be able. And this, by the way, it doesn't matter where you are in the country. You can go to a 7-Eleven or CVS and pay your rent, and we'll get it.
That's great. That's awesome. Well, Rick, if someone wants to reach out to you, wants to learn more about your company, what's the best way for someone to track you down online?
My cell phone number is a very good way to track me down. That number, I'd be more than glad to share, is 407-716-0459. Once again, that's 407-716-0459. My personal email is going to be rick.sane@gmail.com. Once again, that's rick.sane, and that's spelled Sierra Echo India November @gmail.com. Be more than happy to give any advice or share any information.
If you miss Rick's contact information, I'll go ahead and put it on the website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode 167. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to the podcast. We've got a new interview for you on Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
I'm Andrea, founder of a boutique handbag brand, Andy, and this is why I switched to Shopify. I tried three other platforms prior to Shopify, and I remember my breaking point was when I would try to make one little change and my entire site would go down. Shopify made it really easy for me to shift everything over and hit the ground running. I was able to migrate my products and all of my customer information over.
Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Go to shopify.com/listen to take your business to the next level today.